I'm Li Zhen. I'm here to explore with you how the micro-scale physics from Earth's bulk shock could be connected to the large-scale processes in astrophysical shocks. I'd like to thank my collaborators, especially the new ones found in this conference. My hope is that the in-situ measurements made at our planet's bulk shock could be used to address, to help us understand the questions about magnetic field amplification, particle acceleration, and for example, SNR shocks. But how can this be possible? The Mach number in SNR shocks are 50 to 500. For Earth, typically 3, 4 to 20. So there's a gap. The work by Damiano and Anatoly back in 2013 and 2014 was a big encouragement. The work established that the fundamental physics between Mach number 10 and 100 is the same. Now this picture shows that the most intense magnetic field turbulence occurs in the quasi-parallel region. This is the same region where the X-ray emission from TeV electrons, the white region here, were from. Now, so both measurements indicate that you need to have magnetic field amplified by 100 times or so. Now, the measurement we're going to look at Earth's bulk shock is really from the foreshock region. In Damiano's terminology, it's a precursor region. Why? Why do we look at this region? Because if you look at downstream, it's already, the instability already occurred. Things are being compressed. So we need to look at this precursor region to see the wave development and how the instability operates. The measurement will be mainly from the MMS mission. The major advance of this mission is its high time resolution particle distribution functions that are orders of magnitude faster than ever achieved before. For example, the electron distribution functions could resolve the low hybrid timescale, and the ion distribution functions could resolve the ion cyclotron timescale. This is going to be This is going to be important for the discussion we're about to have. An overview of the measurement. So here, the spacecraft goes from downstream. Okay, let's focus on the middle panel. The red band here is the solar wind population. So if you put yourself in the SNR shock context, it's that interstellar medium. That if you're in that frame, it's, if you're in this frame, you're seeing the shock moving toward you at 400 kilometers per second. That's 1 keV. So this band is a solar wind population measured in the spacecraft that's earthbound, so we're in the shock frame. And these higher energy ions, these are backstreaming, back toward upstream. And the region here, you see magnetic field being amplified with an energy density increase by 160 times. And the ions, the solar wind ions, 1 keV now being accelerated to 200 times, all within this region when the magnetic field is being amplified. Now this is all achieved by a newborn foreshock. Why do I say that? Why newborn? Now look at the interplanetary context. So same data here, but But the third panel shows the interplanetary magnetic field. The downstream region is actually a quasi-perpendicular downstream, Q perp. The angle between the shock normal and the upstream magnetic field is almost 90 degrees. Now, the magnetic field transition to a quasi-parallel, almost quasi-radial. You see, in this region, that's the region where you have the most intense magnetic field amplification, and that's when the magnetic field is quasi-parallel. Not quasi-parallel, it's quasi-radial, meaning that it's dominated by the X component, where X points toward the Earth. Now, when there's another component, that BY develops, you see the amplification drops to only a few. And when it reaches quasi-perpendicular, no amplification. So this is very supportive of Damiano's picture, that what he showed and what the simulation and the observation, remote observation shows, that the magnetic field turbulence is amplified in the quasi-parallel shock region. So simply put, this is the configuration that we're going to focus, where magnetic field, interplanetary magnetic field, is pointing toward the Earth, and our spacecraft just coming out of the shock and in the precursor region. So here's the first group of those magnetic field turbulence. We see from almost no amplification, and you see this quasi-sinusoidal phase and the nonlinear steepening phase, and then you see all these turbulence, where if you look at just BZ, the red trace, you see that sharp bipolar structure around here, and in many of these structures that you could recognize, the time scale of this bipolar BZ has information about its parent wave, like here. So the time scale of this oscillation is remembered in these already highly nonlinear structures. So the amplification goes to about 40 nanotesla, while the upstream B field is about 3 nanotesla.
What's the factor?
The factor? About 13, the amplification okay. magnetic field ratio. Yeah, so delta B over B. Exactly.
So that's a shock normal point in this coordinate system?
The shock normal is along X. Now, second panel plots the magnetic, the superthermal ions, only a few energy channels, but this will show us the spatial distribution. Now, look. The valley, the dip, the minimum of these fluxes occur at these bipolar BZ structure, where is also, that's also the B peaks, the B amplitude is the maximum. In other words, these particles, these ions, seem to be trapped in between magnetic field maximums. This is density, high compression by an order of magnitude, and this is associated with these maximum of magnetic field. And this bottom panel plots the ion energy flux in as a function of energy and time. Now, so you see the intermittent appearance of the solar wind ions still. So your spacecraft sitting there, you see this wave blowing by, now you then they disappear, you see solar wind ions, the unperturbed cold solar wind ions here. Then you see another huge structure going by, and each of these huge structures already developed into a mini quasi-perpendicular shock. So you can imagine a lot of mini shocks around here, each of these, and your ions are being bounced in between these structures. Now, so this only go up to the ion energy go up to about 30 keV. What about the higher energy ions? So So same data, just adding this panel here for 95 keV ion. In the beginning, you don't see them. And then you begin to see enhancement of the flux. As they become more and more enhanced, the structure is similar to the lower energy ions. So they are also somewhat trapped in between these mini quasi-perpendicular shock structures. Now this is zoom in to see the even lower energy ion flux behavior and get an idea about the spatial structure, the spatial scale. So each of these magnetic field magnetic field amplification structure is about 30 ion skin depth, about 3,000 kilometers. Now, so the lower energy ions, actually, they are amplified or they are accelerated within this structure. For 1 keV to about 10 keV, you see, this is magnetic field enhancement, and this is ion flux enhancement. They go together. And so until the gyro radius is larger, then they spill out in between these magnetic field peaks. So the mini quasi-perpendicular shocks. Now we go back to the beginning where the fluctuation is just developing. The second panel is the ion phase space density. It's a reduced distribution function as a function of the ion velocity along the shock normal. So look at this initial phase. Even though it's a quasi-sinusoidal, it's already nonlinear. Delta B over B is 2. But here, we could see both the solar wind ions and the backstreaming ions. They are accelerated toward each other by the wave field. You see these phase-space structure. And this large delta B over B actually plays a role in turning the accelerated ion back toward the shock because the original B0 is mainly aligned along the Sun-Earth line. So ion would gyrate only in the plane perpendicular to this Sun-Earth line. But now delta B is perpendicular to the original B0. So they turn some of those ions back toward the shock to get further acceleration. So after this development, you see the first steepened structure that's already act like a quasi-perpendicular shock reflecting some of these solar wind particles. So we're going to look at the analysis of these waves. The frequency in the solar wind frame is about 0.1 to 0.3 ion cyclotron frequency. The angle between the propagation and the background magnetic field is about 14 degrees. And the phase velocity in the solar wind frame is about 40 kilometers per second, which is about the Alfvén speed. So this wave has properties that are similar to what Martin shows in his paper. Now, how about the polarization? So here we look at this chunk of data and turn it into we call minimum variance frame so that you can find the magnetic field variation to see them better so we could look at the hologram to look at the polarization. So these waves are circularly polarized. They are left-handed in a solar wind frame. So all these properties are consistent with the Bell instability, the non-resonant mode that described in Martin's paper. He has two papers, and I was so lucky to catch him at his poster and learn a lot about these waves from him. How about the first, right, when this wave developed into this quasi-perpendicular mini shock? What does the polarization look like? So this is the region where it first developed into a Q-perp shock and the density compression. Now we look at the polarization. So the magnetic field, and this color bar shows the time progression so we can match with this hologram. In the beginning, it's left-handed in the solar wind frame. But then in the middle, it turned into right-handed. So as if it's a collision or combination, merging of two different modes. Here's the spectra. I'm a little shy about showing this spectra because we only have six data points in this region where we could perhaps call it a power law. And really, if you look at the distribution function, it's not isotropic yet. So, but Damiano wants to see it, so here it is. The index, if you can see this color, is -5.4. In my terminology, I call it steeper than -4, but probably in Damiano's terminology, this is shallower, right? Because when you say steeper, you meant harder, that the index is...
No, steeper is shallow.
Oh, right. So this is...
Steeper is softer.
Right. This is softer. This is softer. So this is in the region where you have the magnetic field turbulence. Now, downstream... About an hour or so before, we have this quasi-perpendicular downstream in the magneto sheath. So here the spectral index is also similar to what's in the magnetic field turbulence in the precursor region. But it's still smaller than -4. Now, within the turbulence, part of the magnetic energy is being dissipated through reconnection and back to the particle's kinetic energy. Here is an example. In all these sharp magnetic field BZ fluctuations, density gradient, you see a zoom in of this. Just this time, you see a mini current sheet, DI scale, ion skin depth scale, where you see the reversal of reconnecting magnetic field, BL. This is transformed to the local current sheet coordinate. And you see an electron outflow jet, perpendicular heating of electrons, and energy conversion, the non-ideal energy conversion, J dot E prime, where E prime is E plus VE cross B. So, in all this turbulence, yes, you have the first you have the ion energy converted into magnetic field energy to enhance this magnetic field. But within this magnetic field turbulence, some of the energy is dissipated and returned back to the particles. Here's a summary. The wave properties seems to be consistent with the Bell instability, the non-resonant mode described by Widow. And the magnetic field amplification stops. I actually didn't mention this. If we look at the magnetic field energy density and compare that with the back streaming ion energy density, you'll see that when the maximum, the threshold of this amplification is the energy density of the backstreaming ion energy density. Does that make sense? The ion acceleration first by wave fields, and the accelerated ions are turned back to the shock and bounce in between these quasi-perpendicular shocks, the amplified magnetic field. And the spectral index is steeper than expected, it's softer than expected. If the compression ratio is 4. And part of the magnetic energy dissipated in ion skin depth scale reconnecting current sheet. Thank you.
Thank you for very meaningful.
Lots of questions.
So again, I'm a little confused, and it all this feels like a deja vu. In the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, it was a big deal with these shock leads, shock trains, entities occurring upstream, presumably driven by particles escaping from the shock. Is it more or less the same thing? It slams, another word for them, in space physics community. It's probably the same.
Right. Okay, so by definition, when people say slams, it just means delta B over B greater than 2.
Oh, it's
yeah, so it does satisfy aspect. That criteria.
Yeah, but the other point that I really interested in, Damiana actually taught us that the diffusion is more or less Bohm-like, and it's indeed diffusion. On the other hand, Alex raised the objection that it might be not diffusive behavior whatsoever, and you also mentioned that there are these little shocks that trap particles. When they trap, it's definitely not diffusive. It's trapping, Leviev light, trapping again. It's this kind of dynamics I think Alex was alluding to.
It seems to me it's a terminology, different meanings.
It's
but
a much smaller scale.
Microphone?
I never claimed that at these supra-thermal scales you have a Bohm diffusion. No, so I think it takes much beyond. So at this case, I agree with all that you said. There are local effects that
so it seems to be dominated. I mean, the production of these superthermal ions seems to be dominated by Fermi type process because of all these magnetic field large structures where you bounce these particles back and forth. And from the smaller scale structure where you accelerate the ions, it's like a factory. You have a line of production all the way from KeV, the solar wind energy, to 200 times that energy.
But then the steeper spectrum is not unexpected. It's exactly what you get.
You mean the softer spectrum is what you get? Different environment.
P to the minus 4, quite natural. If we assume this concept of trapping and flying rather than diffusing,
so that's a totally different acceleration scenario in a sense. Mm-hmm.
I'm confused. You told us about this significant changes of magnetic field 90 degrees and the amplification of magnetic field, so you have delta B over B larger than unity, right?
Right.
In this case, I'm confused. What is the nature of this, circular polarized wave? What are they? And
also, this appeared to be consistent with the shear Alfvén waves described in Martin's paper.
Yeah, but if you have super Alfvénic turbulence it is confusing for me. What is this?
Well, I'm still trying to understand, but these are data, so
yeah, it's a, probably you, has a different explanation.
Thank you. Nice talk. So I just had a question about the uncertainty on the spectral slopes that you measured. I'm particularly uncertainty for MMS spectral slope measurements is you reported upstream minus 5.4, downstream minus 5.8. Am I to interpret that as actually being a significant difference, or is the uncertainty large enough that actually all you can really say is that those slopes are
right,
softer?
So that is a good question. And also why I feel a little bit shy about showing those spectra, because it's not exactly power law in my opinion. It's later. So like here, perhaps because we do analyze in situ measurements, as opposed to, you know, remote sensing. So we have high standard regarding the fit. So what will you say? There's some deviation, and then the particle distribution really show it's not isotropic. So can we, is it meaningful to say it's power law, and what's the meaning of this spectral index? In the downstream though, it's better because in the downstream it's already been compressed and things are thermalized, more isotropic. So this is better. And another thing is this is only in the energy range 5 to 30 keV. So it's not like orders of magnitude, but that's what we have here for this instrument. So you asked about the difference, whether it's significant. Maybe it is, but I'm not sure.
I mean, I suppose the context is asking this. So for example, for some of the laser plasma experiments I discussed earlier in the week, we, to be honest, don't really have the ability to distinguish, unfortunately, due to the quality of the measurement between, say, minus a small difference like minus 3 halves and minus 5 thirds. So we probably, mm-hmm. within the uncertainty of the measurement, can't get that. So I was just interested in this kind of context. Mm-hmm. Are you doing better? Can you distinguish between minus 5.8 and minus 5.5? Is that something you can do?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially for the downstream part, if it's a different slope, we can tell the difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm trying to understand what the actual mechanism is for producing the energetic particle spectrum. So you seem to show a series of shocklets.
Right.
And so, but I mean, is this, are you thinking of this as normal diffusive shock acceleration? Because you seem to show that there's this trapping between, for example, two shocklets. Or is the acceleration occurring within one of these shocklets? So I'm a little confused about what the acceleration mechanism actually
so
is.
So it appeared to be both. For the, right, we go from the solar wind energy, that's 1 keV. From 1 keV to about 10, there's trapped in the shocklet.
A single shocklet.
A single shocklet.
Can you see the, oh, I see. You
right, so this is magnetic field. The black is magnetic field amplitude, and this is density, and this is the profile, time profile of the flux. Different color, so I went through really quickly, didn't I? Each different color is a different energy. So the darker blue is 1.3 keV, and all the way up to light blue, that's almost 10. So then above 10 keV, it's then bounced in between the shocklet. But below 10 keV, it's trapped inside one shocklet.
So you would argue if you look at the solar wind energy is sort of going down. So that would be in
you
front
mean
of
this?
The shock. No, yeah, well, yeah, that's an example, or the one to the right of it is an example. So
like here?
The energy goes down. So at the minimum there, that would be downstream of the shock, and then up in front on the left, then that's upstream, and it's. So it's the particles bouncing between.
So I think it's easier if we look at this to know upstream or downstream. So, like for example, take this one or this one. This is upstream to this shocklet, and you see the solar wind get turned around by this shocklet.
Okay.
And right in there, because it's already a Q-perp shock, so it has its own thermalization. That's why you're seeing. That's why you're seeing this extension to lower energy, because there's a huge thermalization, not only acceleration, but also deceleration of the solar wind particles.
So the upstream is a little bit, say, to the right of those, and then...
Right, this is upstream, and this is downstream.
Okay,
how long do they live?
How long do they live? That's a very good question. So we only pass through them once.
I know.
But it seems that they get convected to a downstream and form your quasi-parallel shock downstream that we call magneto sheath. And there you still have all these energetic particles.
Because the old version of what they're saying, like 30, 40 years ago, mm-hmm. is that the shock, quasi-parallel shock, is always forming and reforming and reforming mm-hmm. in a different place. And technically, you don't know that that's not happening. you see two of them, and you assume that they're two at the same time, but
right.
You don't know that.
Right, so that is a very good common and a perspective. So for example, if we just look at here, we know this is solar wind, this is that mini Cooper shock. And how about here? Now you have all these pretty much thermalite. Will you call it already the downstream? So it is forming and reforming exactly, but just that in here we still call it the precursor region or foreshock region because you have these intermittent appearance of the upstream solar wind. If you don't have them, then you're downstream of the shock. But you have them, so you're still in the upstream, and you see.
You could be downstream for a short while, and mm-hmm. then suddenly be upstream again.
Oh.
I think it's intermittent.
Right, it's intermittent. And you can tell because all these structures, you're sure that your spacecraft is not going back and forth. You're sure that you're sending. All these mini sharks going to Earth, all of them, they're blowing by past the spacecraft, all going downstream. So this intermittent appearance of the solar wind structure is actually very similar to what Damiano showed in his simulation, where you see in the foreshock region, you have all these magnetic field enhancement, and then nothing, and then enhancement, and nothing, that intermittent of.
I was going to ask
a short question regarding the, when you stop to amplify magnetic fields, you said the criterion for this is that delta B squared is of order the energy density of cosmic rays. So naively, I would have expected this to be short by V drift over C. So
that's interesting.
You think it's really Bell, and if the cosmic rays are magnetized, there should be an additional factor in there. So I was wondering what your thoughts are about this.
Right. So what we tested was to look at the total energy density of the backstreaming ion population, and then look at the magnetic field energy density. And it seems that in the beginning, it was two orders of magnitude lower, but as the magnetic field energy density rises to about the value of the backstreaming ion energy density of order 1 nanopascal, that's when you don't see further enhancement of the magnetic field. But that's what you mentioned, that criteria is interesting to test. Damiano has something to.
Yeah, can you go back to that previous plot that you had with the little
previous
chocolates?
This one?
That one, yeah. So, I mean, is it certain that you are passing through a bunch of these things and it's not just one shock front moving back?
Oh, yeah, you're certain. Because we have four spacecraft, we could measure their time delay, and you know for sure these are all going in the same direction.
Okay. Because, yeah. I mean, it looks like you just go in. I mean, with the peak on one end, peak on the other, and you could have gone in and then gone back out in the front and been back in the you know, foreshock area. But anyway, I was just curious.
Right. Yeah, that's a good thought. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I have a question as well. So you haven't mentioned electrons at all in any of this, and obviously
for people
doing
good.
Hybrid simulations, so we would like to know what's happening.
Right. So what about electrons? You want to know. In for example, if we go to this slide, if I plot the electron velocity, it shows similar oscillation. So there are also the velocity of electron, bulk velocity of electron, are modulated by these waves. And secondly, I'm trying to make a statement, but I didn't show you the data, so maybe I should go to a backup slide here. So the E field, except that it's very hard to see on this scale. Anyway, the electrons are heated within these structures.
Right, I mean, you said this to me at lunch. So how much, and I mean,
So this
well
is a different situation though. So at lunchtime, what we talk about was Q-perp shock. There, the electron heating and thermalization was accomplished by all these spiky electric field along the shock normal. There you can see the electron, the entire electron population is being accelerated to super thermal velocities then the whole structure gets thermalized. But here it's different. Here, the heating, it just seems to be occurring within or associated with each of these magnetic field structures, and the secondary instabilities that occurring within this within a certain phase of these magnetic field.
So it's reversible, oscillations. So you're saying.
Reversible? No, I don't think reversible, because it's heating.
So you could model this as resistive heating the whole way through.
It's heating, I don't know, resistive.
It just might be useful to calibrate the hybrid simulations.
So let me know what numbers you need. We can talk. Yeah.
Right. Any further questions? All right, let's thank.
Well, can I ask questions as well? I have a question for Greg. So we try such beautiful oscillations, you want to know how the wave particle correlation study could give us. And but you know, you need some kind of catalog in order to interpret that. So we could calculate at least C parallel, C perp, corresponding to lambda resonance or gyro resonance, but we don't know how to interpret that. I mean, if you sum up all the things, you can get some number that's negative, so it indicates that the magnetic field, particle energy is being converted to magnetic field energy, which is also the signature that Jim talked about, also right. Observed. But exactly what do you do with those C parallel, C perp?
Well, in my opinion, it requires building up a sort of an interpretive framework where, you know, with something like simple simulations, where we actually can diagnose what's going on and understand in detail, we can see what a signature looks like. Then you can apply it to these observations. I mean, you can apply it to the observations, you get some picture, but interpreting that picture may be a challenge. Mm-hmm. But I think that being able to tie together with the same diagnostic, I mean, the key point of doing this is it's a single point diagnostic. So you can apply it to spacecraft measurements. You can equally apply it to numerical simulations, but you also know in the numerical simulation everything else that's going on. So I think it's a process, and it's a process that's just beginning, but I would very much like to apply this method to studying the energization that's occurring at shocks. We certainly should talk about this more offline.
Right. Speaker, any questions for any other members of the audience?
I just want to thank the organizers and all the participants. It's been such a privilege to be here with you. I learned a lot more about astrophysics in this past few days than my previous lifetime combined so far. So thank you.
Thank you.
So, coffee time.